come on in.
And now, back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
The kids love him.
And your host.
Welcome to paradise.
Bill Frank.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Bill Frank. The Affordable Care Act, commonly known as Obamacare, opened insurance exchanges this week. A Supreme Court ruling on the constitutionality of Obamacare left the door open for states to refuse to participate in insurance exchanges, and 26 states walked through that door. Another 7 states requested federal assistance starting and implementing the exchanges, which leaves only 17 states, including California, that fully complied with the law. Obamacare is reviled by both the left, the far left, and the far right. The far left believing it didn't go far enough in establishing a single-payer model, and it mainly benefits the large insurance companies. The far right believing it's a restriction of trade and many unnecessary taxes, particularly worrisome when the economy is still weak. The House of Representatives has unsuccessfully tried 40 times to kill or dismantle Obamacare. Rasmussen polls taken this week suggest that 50% of Americans oppose Obamacare's individual mandate, while only 36% favor it. In light of these and other facts, the question arises, will Obamacare topple under its own weight? Joining me to discuss this is Sally Pipes, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Pacific Research Institute, a San Francisco-based think tank. Ms. Pipes is a healthcare expert. She writes the biweekly healthcare column Piping Up for Forbes.com. She's written a new book titled The Cure for Obamacare. Joining me from Southern California. Hi, Sally. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you, and thank you for having me on your show.
Let's dive right into it, shall we? The Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, was sold to the American people as increasing the coverage of health care and health care insurance and lowering its cost. It actually does neither. By 2016, the federal government estimates that 30 million people, that's 10% of the population, will not be covered by Obamacare. Insurance premiums are going up as much as 190% in the insurance exchanges after subsidies, depending on your age. So it seems that Obamacare has done two things. It's shifted the burden of paying for health care from the elderly and the ill to the young and the healthy, and it's benefited big businesses, in particular the insurance companies, and the 1,231 businesses exempted from the employer mandate. How did this go so terribly wrong, Sally?
Well, I think, you know, the president, prior to becoming president, ran on a campaign that he wanted to be the first president in 100 years to do health care reform in America. And, you know, he ran on that and he won. And, you know, he did 58 speeches on the run-up to the signing of the law on March 23rd, 2010. First of all, talking about health care reform. And then in August 2009, turned to talking about health insurance reform. He and Nancy Pelosi said the insurance companies were the villains in all of this and that they wanted to get the villains out of it. And their two goals were universal coverage, bending the cost curve down. And as you mentioned in your introduction, neither one of those goals is going to be achieved. The way to achieve affordable, accessible, quality care for all is to empower doctors and patients rather than the federal government.
Well, absolutely, and I agree with you. I want to come back to that point in just a minute. But let's stick on the point that you just raised in that last answer. Doesn't President Obama take lessons from history? Didn't he watch what Bill and Hillary Clinton tried to do with health care reform in the 90s, seeing that that failed? Isn't it the height of hubris for him to try and do what they couldn't do?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, going back to the days of Woodrow Wilson, I mean, he tried to do this. Roosevelt tried. They couldn't do it. But the president is a man who, you know, has great a sense of hubris about himself, and he wanted to be the person. And in fact, not one single Republican voted for the Affordable Care Act. And if you follow the polls like I do, you know, after it was signed, we saw 55-56% of Americans wanting it repealed and replaced. Now, of course, the exchanges came into open for enrollment on Tuesday, October 1st. That, you know, it's a complete catastrophe. But I think the president wanted this to happen, and damn the torpedoes, he's moving full speed ahead. And I think the American people today, the polls are showing 57% would like to see it repealed and replaced. And once we see, in maybe within a month, what's happening with the exchanges, how much insurance is going to be, how many people who had employer-based coverage are going to be shifted off their employer plan into the exchanges, I think you're going to see that number skyrocket. And maybe it's encouraging for the 2014 elections, but the big issue will be 2016, who will the Republicans run for president? Will that person run on a repeal and replace agenda? And then will the Republicans take the House and the Senate? Then early in 2017, this legislation could be repealed and replaced. And they have to have a replacement agenda. It can't just be no, no, no. There has to be an agenda.
I agree. But Sally, let's go back to something you said in that answer. You were saying that the president wanted this to happen. Now, that has two meanings, and I want to be clear on this. When you say he wanted this to happen, you were referring to he wanted what turned out to be Obamacare to happen. But other people might listen to that and interpret it as saying he wanted the failures that we're seeing with the insurance exchanges and the pushback that we're getting from the states, et cetera, to happen as well, because the far left wants to move it to a single-payer system. Which do you think it is? Is it he wanted to push his agenda, or does he want to push his agenda and see it fail so it goes even farther to the left?
Well, I think both are correct. I mean, I think he wanted to get it through, but his long-term goal is to move to a single-payer Medicare for All system. He said that prior to becoming president. He said it in a number of speeches. I think Nancy Pelosi, former speaker, who was the speaker when the legislation was passed and signed into law, remember 11 days before it was signed, she said, we have to pass this bill so we can find out what's in it. The American people are now finding out what's in it. They don't like it. But Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid on August 10th in a PBS interview said, when asked by Steve Sebelius, you know, we want to not have insurance companies as a way to access health care. And he said, yes, yes, absolutely, yes, we don't want that. And that he believes in a single-payer system. I think Obama, Pelosi, Harry Reid, they all want Obamacare to fail. And the issue will be, you know, with these exchanges, you know, we've seen, you know, after a few days, very little rollout, very little sign-up. We don't know how many people have signed up. There's all these technological glitches, bureaucratic problems. Colorado, D.C., and Oregon, who are operating their own exchanges, they've been delayed. The small business exchange has been delayed for over a month. But I think the big issue is, will young people sign up for the exchanges? And I think the answer to that question is no. The young invincibles, I was one once, I'm sure you were too, but the 18 to 31-year-olds, this whole model is designed so that young people between 18 and 31 will get insurance, so that will add a lot of money into the pool to cover people who are older and sicker. But I think these young people, in spite of the money that's been spent by the administration on ads with the National Football League, the National Basketball Association, movie stars, I don't think that young people are going to sign up. When you look at the average cost of the cheapest premium being in the range of $200 and some per month, and Doug Holtz-Eakin, former head of the CBO, said that, you know, for a healthy 30-year-old, the price from what they have now to the exchange is about 260% up. I think young people will say, I'd rather pay the $95 individual mandate penalty or 1% of income and not pay $200 to $300 a month. So young people won't sign up. The claims for the insurance companies that do operate in the exchange, and a lot aren't, they're going to be very expensive. And so these insurance companies are going to say, for a year or two, we can't operate in this market. They're going to pull out. And then the president will say, you know, we tried the model of competitive marketplaces. It didn't work. And therefore, we need to go to a single-payer model. And, you know, when government has to say, we're only going to spend 11.4% of gross domestic product, that's what they spend in Canada, versus 18% here. But the demand is higher. Therefore, you get long waiting lists. Today in Canada, the average wait from seeing a primary care doctor to treatment by a specialist is 17.8 weeks. That's almost 4 months. This will happen here. Will the American people? My mom used to say, you're becoming an intolerant American. I guess I am. But nobody wants to wait, you know, over 4 months to get an appointment and treatment for a colonoscopy if you think you have a problem, or an MRI if you think you have a brain tumor. Canadians have an escape valve. They come here and pay out of pocket. Where will we go, and where will the best doctors go? Because I think a lot of docs are going to get out of the practice of medicine based on polling I've seen. And young, the best and the brightest kids are not going to go into medicine. So Obama wants a single-payer Medicare for All system.
My guest is Sally Pipes, author of the new book, The Cure for Obamacare. Sally, my head is spinning. There's so much in there.
No.
But I want to start with an example. You mentioned about young people not wanting to pay. A listener to the show wrote in on Facebook, and she had a horrific story. She is not by any means young, but she's not old either. She sort of falls in between that young invincible and old codger like myself. But she writes, you know, she got the letter from her insurance company. Her low-cost, high-deductible insurance policy is no longer being offered. So she shopped around for the same company. The rates were going to go up 119%. So she decided she would check into the California exchange here to see what was going to happen there. That was going to be an increase of 171%. Now, some frugal shopping, she's been able to get that down to 110% increase over what she is currently paying. And she's beside herself because she knows the penalty in the first year is only $95. And even if you're sick because of pre-existing condition clause, you can get sick and then decide to sign up for the insurance. So my question to you as a healthcare expert, Sally, is this. How is healthcare going to be funded if the Young Invincibles, as you say, don't sign up for it? People wait until they're sick, until they buy the insurance. How is this all going to get funded?
Well, it's going to be funded through the tax system by us as taxpayers. I mean, you know, the Covered California was California was the first state to take funds from the feds back in April 2010 to develop their Covered California exchange. Here we are, the exchange opened on Tuesday, October 1st. But Peter Lee, the executive director, said, a couple of weeks ago, we didn't know whether it would be ready. They announced on October 1st that the website had received 5 million hits on Tuesday, October 1st, but they had to revise that down to 645,000. So it's a huge problem. But the president promised all Americans that the price of the health insurance that they could get on the exchange would be a lot cheaper. There's only two states in the nation where the insurance, as we know today, one is Colorado and one is Nebraska. And I guess the third would be New York, which had the most expensive individual insurance in the country. And very few people signed up for individual insurance in New York State because of community rating and guaranteed issue, meaning you can, an insurer couldn't discriminate based on your health status, nor could they deny you a plan when you were already sick. So it's very interesting. I mean, this is going to be tremendously expensive, and people are going to be very, very upset when they find out that the president, who promised the American people the average family would see their health care premium go down by $2,500. And, of course, the Congressional Budget Office came out and said, it's going to go up by $3,000 a year. And Kaiser Family Foundation has said the average family premium this year for employer-based coverage is $16,000. So there's going to be a lot of people who are very upset with what they find out. If you like your doctor and your life, your like your health insurance, nothing will change. Well, just look at what's happening with these large employers, even though the employer mandate has been delayed a year till January 1st, 2015. I mean, this is amazing. People, and they won't have access to the same network of doctors, same network of hospitals. People are going to be absolutely up in arms over this.
Well, it is going to be very interesting to see how people react. My guest is Sally Pipes. So, Sally, we haven't danced around the issue of politics, but I'm going to ask you, even though you're a healthcare expert, to weigh in on the politics, because the House of Representatives has tried unsuccessfully 40 times to repeal or to defund Obamacare, including the most recent attempts to tie Obamacare to shutting down the government. Now, Obamacare was passed through legislation, and it was upheld as a tax by the Supreme Court. So the question is, if it should be repealed or if it should be altered, shouldn't that be done through legislation and not by trying to tie it to continuing resolutions to fund the government?
Well, I mean, it's all very controversial on repealing parts, defunding. I mean, Senator Ted Cruz did 21 hours of speaking, for defunding Obamacare, and he actually quoted some of my work. But I think, you know, the bigger picture is I just don't think under the continuing resolution they're going to be able to defund Obamacare, delay Obamacare for a year, repeal the medical device tax of 2.3% that came in this year, because the Democrats have the Senate and they have the presidency. They're never going to buy into this. But I do think it's important to keep bringing these things up before the American people so we can keep this foremost in people's minds. Because if you think back to 2012, the Supreme Court, Chief Justice John Roberts, upheld the constitutionality of the individual mandate. And then, of course, the election of 2012, President Obama was reelected. But the Republican candidate, Mitt Romney, never wanted to talk about health care reform because he knew that Romney Care was a microcosm of Obamacare. John Gruber at MIT helped to write both. And so we lost a lot of momentum. So I think the big thing now is we need to get this dealt with. We need to do the debt ceiling. But I think we need to focus on keeping the American people apprised of what we could repeal now, the medical device tax at 2.3%, which is a job killer. Even New York Senator Chuck Schumer, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, they would like to see it repealed and replaced. Let's repeal IPAB, the Independent Payment Advisory Board, which is designed to, curb Medicare cost increases. Let's, repeal the HIT tax, the health insurance tax, which is very detrimental to insurance companies being able to provide coverage at a cost that they can cover claims from the premiums they collect. What about the tax on pharmaceutical companies? I mean, it's a big destroyer of research and development. I mean, America is where drugs and biologics and are developed in the world. They're not developed in countries with price controls. So there are things that can be pushed to repeal and replace, and some things have bipartisan support. Will the president sign? I don't know. But the longer-term issue is we have to get the American people engaged, because as my mentor, the late Nobel laureate Milton Friedman, used to tell me, when a government program comes in, and when you look at these subsidies for people who will buy insurance in the exchange, if their income is between 138 and 400% of the federal poverty level, once they get a subsidy, it's very hard to take these things away from people. And so we have to keep the people, the American people, really up to speed what this means for their health care and how it is not going to lead to affordable, accessible, quality care for all.
Well, I agree. We have to do that. We have to keep it in the forefront of Americans' minds so they can make up their minds based on facts rather than fiction or conjecture. I would agree with that. But the way in which we do it is important. And I was against the Republicans trying to hold that up because this was a law. It had gone through the Supreme Court. My eighth grade civics kicked in and said, well, that's what it is. We've got to do it through legislation. And I was buying that rhetoric until I was reminded that the president himself has come up with exemptions to the law.
Right.
That as the president, the chief executive of the country, he cannot by himself unilaterally make. So when President Obama broke that cycle himself, I think he made it fair game. Unfortunately, it's now become a propaganda war. Who's going to win the war of words? And only time will tell. My guest is Sally Pipes. We're talking about her book, The Cure for Obamacare. Sally, in your earlier answer, you were talking about costs. And I want to drill down on costs for just a minute, because there are so many great examples to use. But the most cited example regarding the benefit of free markets dictating healthcare costs has to be LASIK eye surgery. Now, LASIK is not covered by most insurance, so it's a perfect controlled experiment. Patients pay out of pocket. Costs have plummeted by 50%, down to $2,000 per eye in the last 15 years. And the recovery time has gotten much shorter. And there's a lower risk of human error as well, as robotics have kind of kicked in. Aravon, which is an eye surgery company, can actually do cataract surgery now for as little as $25. Cardio bypass surgery in Bangalore, India is 90% cheaper than the United States, with a lower mortality rate than we have here in the United States. We're getting better outcomes with higher, without sacrificing any quality. So the question is, why haven't we been able to control healthcare costs here in the United States as they're doing in Bangalore and other places?
I think very few people realize that our healthcare, 18% of gross domestic product in America is healthcare. It's about $3 trillion a year. It's more than any other country in the world. But we do not have a free market in healthcare. 50% of healthcare is in the hands of government through Medicare for our elderly, Medicaid for low-income Americans, the CHIP program for children, the VA program. So what are the two industries in this country where costs have continued to rise and outcomes have gone down? One is healthcare, and the second is K-12 public education. As Milton Friedman would say, in every other aspect of our life, whether it's LASIK surgery, whether it's the microwave oven, whether it's a DVD player, in America with competition, you get prices, you get more goods, better goods, and the price comes down. But with all of the mandates and controls on healthcare, and in particular health insurance companies, we see the cost going up, not down. And it's a shame because, you know, I mean, if you just even look at the federal tax code, you know, during World War II, when wage and price controls were in, the government gave employers the ability to write off the cost of their health care, and employees, 60% of Americans get their health care today through their employer. This is going to change under Obamacare. You get your health coverage with pre-tax dollars. But if you lose your job and you go out into the individual market, you have to buy your insurance with after-tax dollars. If the government would make that one change to the IRS so that that individuals could buy their insurance with pre-tax dollars, you would see a tremendous opening up of the market. A lot of people that are losing their employer coverage would go into the individual market, and you would see, just like in any other aspect, a lot of new entrants into the field, and competition would develop in the health insurance industry. You know, it's very interesting when you look at Covered California. Aetna, United, and Cigna, three of the major health insurers, they didn't even compete to get into the exchange Covered California. And now Aetna and United have said they're not even going to be writing individual plans in California in 2014. So we need to open up the competition, not force, you know, competition down so that we have monopolies or mini monopolies.
Competition is always the best way. My guest is Sally Pipes, author of the book, The Cure for Obamacare. Sally, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, The Cure for Obamacare?
Well, I want them to really understand that there is an alternative to increasing the role of government in our healthcare system. We can achieve affordable, accessible, quality care by universal choice will lead to universal coverage. We need all kinds of different plans for different people. But empowering the federal government to control our health care is going to result in all of us, you know, having our care rationed. We will face long waiting lists like they do in countries like Canada and Great Britain, and we will not have access to the best treatments and procedures and pharmaceuticals. As my friend PJ O'Rourke would say, if you think healthcare is expensive now, just wait until it's free.
Sally, if people have been, their interest has been piqued by what you have to say, they want to learn more about you, they want to learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
Our website is www.pacificresearch.org. My two books, The Truth About Obamacare, came out Regnery 2010. It's on Amazon.com. My second book, The Pipes Plan, The Top 10 Ways to Dismantle and Replace Obamacare, came out from Regnery, also available on Amazon. And my latest broadside from Encounter Books, The Cure for Obamacare, which is written for the person in the street, for politicians. It's a very quick read, and that's also available on Amazon.com.
That is great. Sally, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you for having me on again.